While everyone's obsessing about the Christmas season, you've got a different season on your mind. One where red noses come from shouting your support in the crisp, cold, pitchside air. Where the roaring fire is in your belly, not your sitting room. And the perfect gift is an unexpected win. Don't miss a moment with a GAA season ticket. A gift for yourself or the fan in your life. Available at gaa.ie/season ticket. Are you in? The GAA, where we all belong.
Last word on Today FM.
Joining us for the week trending, we have journalist Lise Hand and we have the MD of the Communications Clinic, Owen Tomás McDermott. And I want to start in maybe an unusual spot, but I want to talk about people who clone their dogs to make sure that when their dog passes away, that they have the replacement being the same dog.
Well, a version of it, Matt, really, because the cloning of the pet suggests that it will be able to have the same look and features and same perhaps biology of the former pet. But I think being a dog owner myself, one of the amazing things about my own dog is its temperament and its behavior. And I think there's part that, yes, you may be able to clone the biology, but its behavior or its personality, you can't clone. And that the environment that it is growing up within influences how it is be. And this story is Tom Brady, the former New England Patriots quarterback, who was promoting an organization called Colossal, who I think Paris Hilton is a shareholder in it, and she herself has cloned one of her dogs, that he is cloning the family pet that he has gone through. I think it shows that Tom Brady has more sense than money, because I do think...
Sorry, more money than sense, surely. Well, put it the other way around.
Look, he's thought to be worth more than $300 million, and his Fox Sports deal is something like $375 million, so he's tons of money, but it's a bit of a daft thing, because I think genuinely what makes a pet and makes often people special is their personalities and the shared experiences that you have with them. And although it might look the same, it's not the same.
Yeah, I'm fascinated, at least, by the story of Barry Diller, because I read his autobiography earlier in the year. It's a really good book. He's a Hollywood billionaire, then he got into tech after being in the movies, but it turns out that he had a dog called Shannon, which he found. He said he can't remember where in Ireland it was. He said about a half an hour south of Shannon, or by helicopter, which suggests to me it was either in Kerry or West Cork, that he found a Jack Russell Terrier. God knows whose dog it was. But he brought it back to America, and then before it died, he had it cloned by a biotech company in South Korea.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was a case of dog napping. I think he did a little bit of due diligence, or diligence, I suppose.
That was bad. Go on.
He did make inquiries, and the dog was told that the puppy had no owner. And yeah, he just described, he actually cloned five so-called daughters from this lost pup. And it was like a little Jack Russell. And he just, when he was asked why, he just said she was a super dog. She was the loveliest, most adventurous. She was a wonderful little animal. And there were five of them. There was Shannon, then there was Dina, Evita, Tess, Luna, and then Bossy and Birdie last year. I mean, to be honest, I have mixed feelings about this, because it does sound daft on one level, but I mean, people really love their dogs. I mean,
yes.
The dog is actually a member of the family. I mean, like my mother has a dog, a little roundy dachshund called Ludo, and I kind of own a leg, I suppose. And I mean, it's the apple of all our eye. And I mean, if there was, you know, a way perhaps to, but as I said, to replicate everything about him, like his personality and everything, then you could see why people go for it. But of course, as you rightly point out, Owen, I mean, it's beyond the reach of most people, because the median price for cloning a dog is about 45,000 euro. And they also clone a horse for, now this is different. I mean, a horse, you could clone a horse for 73,000. And I actually thought to myself, you know, there'd be an awful lot of horse breeders that would be just a drop in the ocean. I mean, imagine if that was around and they could have cloned, you know, Dawn Run or Arkle, or one of the like champion jockeys that would have all the DNA of a superb racehorse. I mean, you could sort of see
often, I mean, the likes of Coolmore Stud make a small fortune by, as I say, covering the mares with the winning horses, but the chances that the offspring are going to be similarly brilliant on the track are mixed.
Well, they've tried to use surrogates for thoroughbred mares where they'll have another mare carry its egg. And what they've found is, albeit that the egg is coming from the thoroughbred mare, that the gestation process in the other horse doesn't lead to an improved outcome or the same outcome. That the foal had been developed in its mother's womb, the gestation process would have led to a better outcome rather than the use of a surrogate.
But I wonder what cloning, because it's probably a different process, would... I mean, you'd have to say that the owners of, you know, of multi-million pound, euro, dollar, you know, horses, racehorses with potential earnings and so on. I mean, you know, you'd kind of think they would go down this route, at least to try it.
Okay, well, I want to get quite dystopian here, but if it's possible to clone a dog, if it's possible to clone a horse, are there perhaps people trying to clone people somewhere that we don't
perhaps
know about?
That's where you'd wonder on the motivations. From what Tom Brady says, his motivations is the love of their dog so much. But I think you root it back into, well, although the looks, the features, the biology of the creature will be the same, what I think makes people special is their personality, the shared experience that you have with them, the history, the memories, the love, the affection that you've built up over time. That just would have to be, that is impossible to recreate with a clone, one would think.
I mean, I just have to laugh. Really, I'm sorry, but just, you know, Owen is just so sincere and positive about this, because when you said that, my mind immediately went to my list of enemies and I was going, I hope none of them ever get cloned. So it's
they're probably most likely to be the type of people who would want to be
exactly.
cloned or want themselves to be cloned.
I'd be fairly shocked if, you know, that the entire Silicon Valley tech bros and oligarchs. I mean, we saw, wasn't there that great hot mic when, wasn't it Vladimir Putin and
Xi Jinping?
And, Xi Jinping. And they were literally caught talking about longevity and how to, like, you know, prolong their lives. So again, it goes back to money, that if human cloning is ever available, it is going to be the billionaires that are going to take advantage of this, and they're going to come back.
Billionaire Brian Johnson, who's invested huge amounts in his aging process, and he's a billionaire, but his whole objective is again to delay aging and to elongate his life. So you would presume if he's willing to invest so much in himself, that maybe that is something that they would look at.
Yeah, yeah.
And themselves afterwards.
Meanwhile, tell us about the lion that was loose in County Clare, except it wasn't a lion. It was a dog.
There was a lion-like creature roaming the woods of West Clare, and people thought, gosh, what is this? And it turned out to be a Newfoundland dog who had just had a new haircut that made it look like looked like a lion, and the dog's name conveniently is Mouse, and it's a Newfoundland, and it's striking, I think, that given that people thought it was going to be or something that was like a lion, that we discover that it is one of the most gentle and docile dogs that you can find. People know that the Newfoundland dog is known as the Nanny Dog, and if you read Peter Pan, Nana, the dog in it, is the Newfoundland dog within it, and a beautiful animal, but not a lion in West Clare.
No, I mean, it's a clear classic shaggy dog, well, half shaggy dog story, I suppose you'd call it. And, you know, but what is fascinating about this story is it's just that people do love a good news story or whatever, because this was picked up, it featured in the New York Times, it was on ABC News, it was on, it was actually on television down in Australia. And people just, cottoned onto this because it's just a little bit of fun, a bit harmless. You know, everybody loves a story about a dog, and it was a happy ending. Nothing was mangled, died, or arrested. So, you know, it's just a lovely little story.
And no man bit the dog. Listener says, as a dog lover, I've loved and grieved for some great friends, but so many lovely dogs get put to sleep every day. Imagine the impact Tom Brady could have if he decided to rescue instead.
Great, great point. Absolutely great point.
Yeah, okay. Now, Let's talk about, well, it's method acting, because I think recently Brian Cox from Succession, who played Logan Roy, was very critical of method acting. And I think in particular this was aimed at Jeremy Strong in his performance in Succession as Kendall Roy. But this was the most famous method actor of all, at least somebody who you once worked with on a movie, albeit you weren't acting in the movie. Daniel Day-Lewis has responded to this. Tell us about this story.
Yeah, it's, well, I think it's Brian Cox slightly channeling Logan Roy in this, and he was having a go at Jeremy Strong, who plays Logan Roy in Succession.
He plays Kendall Roy.
Kendall Roy, excuse me, misspoke. And he accused him really of method acting, and he railed against what they call the effing annoying practice of actors sort of taking elaborate steps to get into character.
And it's sort of staying in character, isn't
it? Staying in character. I mean, it's known as the Stanislavski method. The Stanislavski method. Okay. I actually said that twice. That's great. So it was a form of method that was developed in America, obviously. And it is about staying in character and going to enormous lengths to become your character, not just to act your character, to actually become it. It's a very profound and deep thing. And probably one of the most well-known proponents of this is Daniel Day-Lewis. And he's famous for this, going right back probably to My Left Foot when he was playing Christy Brown. Yeah, and you know, was wheeled around in a wheelchair and so on and stayed in character for a lot of that. Now, I did have the great fortune to work on a film In the Name of the Father when he was playing Giuseppe Conlon. And
Sorry, did he not play Jerry Conlon?
Oh, God, what's wrong with me? It's Friday. Yeah, of course he played Jerry Conlon. Thank you. I'm glad you're on the ball here. Yeah, and actually, I think was what the point I was going to make was Pete Postlethwaite played his father, Giuseppe. And you could not find two actors who were less alike, because Pete Postlethwaite, as soon as he walked off set, was absolutely just snapped out of it, would have a laugh and a joke with everybody, go for a pint, was one of the loveliest men I ever met. And yet he turned in and the astonishing performances, Giuseppe Conlon, and he was nominated for an Oscar, as was Daniel for his role as Jerry. Now that year they didn't win because they were up against Philadelphia and Tom Hanks and all that. But watching Daniel on the set, he really in depth researched his roles. He would be note perfect in the accent, because Jerry Conlon used to come onto set and he did sound really like him. There was certain things during the making of the film. For instance, there was one particular time when Daniel wanted to experience what it would be like to undergo a police interrogation. And that was literally kind of organised, not in a real police station, obviously, but that was basically facilitated and organised so he could get some sense of what it was like to be interrogated. So this is a man who takes his craft and art very seriously. So he actually clapped back against against Brian Cox, and just he started complaining in a rare interview he gave to the Big Issue, and sort of complained about Cox being on his soapbox. It's interesting because we've heard nothing from Daniel Day-Lewis for so long. He's been completely off the scene.
Well, he's just back with a new movie that his son has directed.
He's back with his son's movie, An Enemy, and has hinted that he's actually going to come back and make more movies as well. But that's a new Daniel, because Daniel would never have tangled sort of publicly with someone.
But did he need to get so deep into character so as to be the character off the set as well?
It's the way he acted. I mean, I think everybody has a different approach.
Yeah, but you
it's
know the famous
worked for him.
The famous Laurence Olivier line to Dustin Hoffman, wasn't it? You know, Dustin Hoffman for what was the name
Marathon
of him?
Man.
Marathon Man. Got into deep into character as well. And I think Laurence Olivier famously said to him, so what's wrong with just acting?
Yeah. Exactly. But it's quite clearly different people approach acting in different ways. And I mean, they're not harming anyone. So, I mean, I don't see why people can't leave them alone.
Yeah, but they'd be a bit of a pain in the arse for the other people to have to work with when they actually just go back into being their normal person, to find that the person that they've been acting alongside is continuing in the character that they're now, the cameras aren't rolling.
Well, I think that the trick is if you're good at it. And I mean, Daniel Day-Lewis has you know, a long shelf full of statuettes to prove that he is actually extremely good at what he does. Now, I think if you're just, you know, messing around and driving everybody mad and, you know, you're not particularly good at it, I think someone should take you aside and have a long chat with you.
Well, I'd recommend anybody who is interested in this to read the New Yorker profile of Jeremy Strong from back in 2021, where they obviously profile Strong, but they talk to his fellow cast members. And it is striking that how torturous it must have been for all of them to work with him. And I was thinking about the Daniel Day-Lewis in a method, and I figure the average movie may take, what, 4 or 5 months to shoot in and around. Having to, you know, and you could probably get over that, but if you have to work with somebody on and off for 5 or 6 years and they're behaving like this, you would feel the pain and maybe
that's
suffering that Brian
point.
Cox had
all
to
right.
deal with.
So it's the big international story of the week has been the election of a Democratic mayor of New York. This is Zoran Mamdani.
My friends, we have toppled a political dynasty. I wish Andrew Cuomo only the best in private life. But let tonight be the final time I utter his name. If anyone can show a nation betrayed by Donald Trump how to defeat him, it is the city that gave rise to him. This is not only how we stop Trump, it's how we stop the next one. So, Donald Trump, since I know you're watching, I have 4 words for you. Turn the volume up. New York will remain a city of immigrants, a city built by immigrants, powered by immigrants. And as of tonight, led by an immigrant. President Trump, when I say this, to get to any of us, you will have to get through all of us.
Okay, as a former immigrant, Lise Han, to New York, you lived there for a while. What do you make of that? That, you know, Mamdani very much brought out this whole thing about this is an immigrant city. Embraced
well,
yes, it.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this is what he tapped into. His rise, you know, from nobody knowing who he was to now actually being the elected mayor and by a decent amount was extraordinary and meteoric. And he took this really stance from the very beginning. I mean, he famously walked the length of Manhattan Island, meeting people on the way and very much cementing this, that we are a city of immigrants. It was notable in that speech he brought in so many different nationalities and ethnicities, and very much tried to kind of create this notion of, you know, this is what we are, the melting pot. And I think this is the notion of melting pot has become an absolute and utter curse word in the red side of America. There's been a huge rise, particularly in, you know, anti-immigration sentiment, Islamophobia. And actually, the amount of Islamophobia and hysteria and red scare that has swirled around his candidacy is absolutely extraordinary. I mean, the hysteria thrown at him, you know, he is an Islamist, he is a terrorist. I mean, they literally link
him. He's anti-Semitic, has been claimed as well.
Absolutely. I mean, they literally try and link him with 9/11. I mean, he's only 34. He was only a kid when 9/11 happened. But he, by doing this, he's pushing back on that. He's trying to, I think, recreate the notion that it's being a melting pot is a strength. And it's sort of, you know, we hang together, we hang apart. And it's an interesting strategy because at the same time that he's doing that, I think what's very striking is that he isn't being in any way emollient. You know, there have been some comparisons to Barack Obama in terms of his, you know, his great oratorical skills and his facility with words. But whereas Barack Obama from the very outset was very, very, very emollient and was constantly trying to reach across the aisle to the other side, to that stage it was a Tea Party rather than MAGA, this guy isn't really doing that. You know, he's sort of saying this is how we defeat Donald Trump. This is how we, and it's very much still very scrappy what he's saying. So it's an interesting balance, what he's doing. And if he is going to implement the things that he wants to do, he's going to need the melting pot behind him.
Yeah, one listener says, and you consider that Trump is the son of an immigrant. Indeed, his mother was from Scotland. And as somebody else points out, he was married, is married to an immigrant and was previously married to an immigrant.
Donald Trump is a list of contradictions, Matt. But I think in relation to Mandam, like what we can see is building on what Lisa's talked about, the simplicity of his message and then the discipline that he showed around it over the last couple of months, where it was keeping focused on universal childcare, city-run groceries and fast free buses. Like, so that simplicity of message around the affordability was key to it. But also through the use of those singular specific examples, it's very understandable. People can remember.
Although, will he be able to deliver any
of them? Maybe that will be the question, where he has been eloquent in its description but may need to be more dogmatic in its implementation. Also, though, he was highly effective through the use of various different channels, most notably Instagram and TikTok, but no more than any effective politician over the last more than a century, whether it was FDR using radio for his fireside chats, the Nazis using cinema, JFK using TV, Obama using the internet, Trump using X. We now see another modern politician using a modern technology, which was excellent. I think it's interesting, though, in terms of the relation to Trump, is that this is part of what I think is a collection of a series of things that we're seeing a little bit of a shift of. For example, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who really drank the Kool-Aid of MAGA, was involved or bought into a lot of the QAnon conspiracy theories, was totally behind January 6th. She's starting to swerve, and she was out during the week talking about affordability and prices. I think if you look at inflation and cost of living, it's still very, very high. And if you look at the numbers around Republican voters, when they're asked who do they blame for costs not going down, they still say Trump. I think if you look at Gavin Newsom going to COP representing California, Trump not going representing the United States, that's significant. The Epstein stories haven't gone away. J.D. Vance was out talking about we need our electorate to come together. We live or die by our vote getting out. You don't say that when you're comfortable and confident. You know, you can get a sense that they're on the back foot. We can see Elon Musk has gone back to AI and Tesla. I suppose $1 trillion would make you want to go back there. But I think that in and of itself is significant. And so you're starting to see these little moments Mamdani may be a bigger moment, but you put all of that together and there is a sense that maybe the tide is turning, which will look very carefully at the midterms, because if the midterms go wrong for him this time next year, Trump will have had 2 years rather than 4 years to implement his approach, because he'll be lame duck. He won't be able to do anything.
Yeah, I think the cost of living issue, like everywhere, is a huge electoral issue and will be, I think, the mainstay of the upcoming midterms.
New York is so expensive. I was there in August. It was insanely expensive.
It's insanely expensive. And, you know, it may not be a blue wave, but it's perhaps an early indication that, you know, that the voters and his base are becoming disaffected. I mean, but they elected a female governor in New Jersey, first time female governor. They elected a Democratic governor in Virginia. And there was a couple of other key legislators that that actually elected Democrats against the perceived wisdom and the polling and so on. So while it may not, you know, it could be just an indication that that the whole MAGA solid base is beginning to fray along the edges.
We'll see. I'm not sure it's going to be that immediate. Finally, Lise, tell us about the experience of the Mexican president, Claudia Sheinbaum, in the streets of Mexico City.
Yeah, I mean, this story, when I saw it, it was sort of kind of going, well, I mean, that's something that happens to two women on a daily basis everywhere, basically. But anyway, Claudia Sheinbaum was accosted by a drunk. She was out on the streets. She's the president of Mexico. She was out on the streets and when she was just mingling with citizens, and she was accosted by a visibly drunk man who tried to kiss her on the neck and embrace her. And he was steered away from her, but she was kind of went, you know, don't worry about it. But then she did actually go ahead and press charges and basically saying, this is something I experience as a woman, but it's something that all women in our country experience. If I do not file a complaint, where does that leave all Mexican women? If they do this to the president, what happens to all the other women in the country? And I think this is probably a very important message. It's literally, if the president isn't safe, a female president isn't safe, who is supposed to have security around her, though she doesn't like a big security president, it just goes to show that this is a lived experience of women on the city streets, on the streets of towns and villages around the world. That, you know, gender-based, you know, violence, assault, inappropriate behaviour, running the whole gamut there is just something that it is a part of everyday life for an awful lot of women. And I think when a woman of her, you know, at the level that she operates on is taking action, I think it is sending out an important message that you just can't get away with it. This is not acceptable behaviour. And despite the best efforts of the general manosphere, it is, you know, not to be normalised, and this should be treated as a criminal.
I think I'll leave it there.
Well, yeah.
You have anything to add?
No, I just think it's striking, and that I think there's a general piece around women, but also female politicians. And we've seen Mary Lou McDonald getting a horrific level of abuse a couple of weeks ago, a different type of abuse, but totally uncalled for. And that piece around the delicate balance of public access and your privacy and protection. But I think it's something that we need to watch for in political life in Ireland.
Thank you very much, Eoin Tomás McDermott from the Communications Clinic, and Lisa Hand.
The Last Word on Today FM.
While everyone's obsessing about the Christmas season, you've got a different season on your mind. One where red noses come from shouting your support in the crisp, cold, pitchside air. Where the roaring fire is in your belly, not your sitting room. And the perfect gift is an unexpected win. Don't miss a moment with a GAA season ticket. A gift for yourself or the fan in your life. Available at gaa.ie/season ticket. Are you in? The GAA, where we all belong.